This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Is this just a situation where you're going to cut a bunch of our blurbs out of context?
No, because then there would be blisters in awkward places, which would be terrible.
Oh, here we go. That is the dirtiest thing I've ever seen.
Listen to The Nerd with Adam, Will, and Amanda.
Why did I get top billing? I don't deserve top billing.
Because out of the two of us, you're the one she likes better.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
I'm 8 months pregnant. Put another one in me.
And that's when she figured out that I had taken drugs.
How are all of you? We're going to do a promo, but we're just going to talk sex.
I got to see your dick.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
She cooked dinner for me in lingerie, which hopefully she doesn't listen to this, because I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
This podcast phenomenon is sweeping the nation, and we're all up on the bandwagon with the plethora of episodes at nerd.pantspending.com.
Willem Dafoe gives me a lady boner.
Blue Chew is bullshit, by the way.
Listen to The Nerd. It's not the worst thing that can happen to you. Is that a good no? It takes effort to do a promo.
Yeah.
And I think we knew that before.
Although I feel like we could just put that part in.
Yeah.
That along with the nerdy thing Adam said and me with the sexy voice. There you go. There's your promo, Will. Congratulations.
The Nerd. I'm sorry.
You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Fill it up! I dare you, pussies!
Get ready for the social hour!
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington. This is The Social Hour. On today's show, Deese sits down one-on-one with musician Jason Perry. And now your host. He's glad it was daylight savings time, because now there's just one less hour of sleep he can lose. Deese Casillas.
Malav Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thanks for coming around for another episode, you beautiful bastards. We appreciate you taking a listen. As always, guys, quick reminder off the top. Go to pantspending.com/Patreon. You can do a one-time donation or subscribe. Get all the behind-the-scenes content from across the entire network, the Burr Martin Experience, Never Ending Random Discussion, and some stuff I kick in there occasionally, too. So, guys, we have a special episode. We don't have Sophie or Jeremy here tonight. Jeremy still says he has kids, allegedly, and Sophie has been a little ill, giving her the night off because she needs it. God damn it, she works hard. So, but that is fantastic because I have musician and our guest Jason Perry in studio. Jason, how you doing?
Pretty damn good, man. How you doing?
Good, man. Thanks for coming down, man. I appreciate you being here. I'm actually I like this. Not that I don't like having Sophie and Jeremy here. It's a different show when I have. I usually have a news anchor sitting in that chair you're at. I got my producer over here. And then we usually have a guest come in. But more and more, I've been really enjoying doing these one-on-one interviews. So actually, I don't always know it's going to happen because I don't always know if my crew is going to make it or not last minute. So it's nice when I get to, though. It's actually kind of exciting. I like to sit down and really get to know people and talk to people. It's really interesting. I think people are fucking interesting, man.
Yeah, and like especially when it's just two dudes in a basement. You
know?
Like we can really let it hang here.
We can go. We can get crazy, man. It's a long night. There's drugs hidden around this room somewhere. We play like a weird Candyland game until we find them. That's how it goes. So Jason is a musician. You are. I don't know a lot about you. And I like that, too. I like that also because it means that I get to find out as we go, and it's all just kind of happens. And I like, that's my favorite type episode. It just kind of happens. We see where it goes. So let's start at the beginning. You are a musician. You play. That's not where you started, but you're in Spokane now. Are you from Spokane?
No. I landed here like 5 years ago, and like I got myself a job, and I was playing in a band. And, like, I had a girlfriend, and it was cool, but I was still really sad because I only got to play my guitar for, like, an hour a day. And I was like, well, this is just silly because, like, this should be working really well here. Like, I'm checking the boxes. And so, it was about 5 years ago, and I just, like, just flipped the chess table over and was like, I just got to make the music thing work. And
yeah.
Just got really diligent on, like, practicing obsessively and, like, just getting my shit together and... After a few years of work, so it's been it's been just about 2 years since like I worked a real job and just been making music.
Where were you from originally?
I grew up out in Coeur d'Alene, and then went to Harvard on the Lake down there, North Idaho Community College for a little bit, and then went down to U of I. Lived in a van for a while, and then landed back here.
Okay, so you're regionally, you're so not too far off. You're from the region at least. You kind of know the area, and then there's a Harvard on the Lake. That's pretty pretentious, Coeur d'Alene. We're Harvard, but we're on a lake. It's even better.
It's really more so that everybody at NIC was just kind of ashamed to be there. So we were like, no, it's Harvard on the Lake. We're really trying things. That's we got hilarious. Really good at frisbee golf. Like, you know, we were studious.
Yeah, it's the Northwest. It's a staple. So you grew up kind of in the region, and how long have you been playing music for?
I think it's been 12 years since I picked up the guitar. Funny story, I started out on the Guitar Hero.
Okay.
And got really good at that over a couple of years. And then one day my old man was like, you know, you could actually just be good at a real guitar. So I had to start from scratch again.
It's just pick it up and go, huh?
Yeah, the Guitar Hero does not transfer to the real guitar.
Sure, you just wear the buttons on this thing. I don't know how to play this. This guitar is broken. So 12 years on the guitar, and then... So you started with an acoustic, I assume. Is that...
No, I had an electric and learned a couple Blink-182 songs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I got the acoustic and learned some Johnny Cash and some Blue Oyster Cult. And then, yeah, it surprisingly got better from there.
Yeah, from there it just got better. Excuse me, Jesus. So about 12 years, and you're growing up Coeur d'Alene, you're playing the guitar, you're getting the, you know, did you think when you picked up a guitar were you like, oh, this is gonna get me the ladies here, this is gonna do it?
No, I had exactly no pretensions about even doing anything with the guitar. Like, I was just a professional hobbyist and just loved doing lots of things. And then when I was 18, like, I slipped into like the nastiest breakup, 6 month depression funk. And then I was like, oh, this music shit's real. Yeah, I need to get into this. I don't want to kill myself anymore.
Yeah, that's a good time to. That's a good like discover yourself moment.
Yeah,
you know, it's good that you weren't the guy at like in high school who's like sitting by the fire, like trying to swoon the ladies. You know, be like, listen, I've got my, I know how to play Berlin, Take Your Breath Away on acoustic here. If you haven't heard it, it's quite nice.
No, man, I've just never had it in me to be that guy. Like, I for the first few years, I didn't really play gigs. I just played out on the street a lot.
Sure.
And especially when I was living in a van, I would just go play until I had money for lunch. So it was really more of the thing of like being the guy in the city park with no shoes on that looks like he hasn't showered in a couple of weeks because he hasn't, asking for money for a bagel.
Sure. Yeah, that's a wow. Bagel money, man. You must have been doing playing good guitar. Bagels aren't cheap. With the smear, too? Getting the cream cheese also? Or?
Moscow has a really good bagel shop. They do the meatballs in their bagels.
Wait,
so it was worth the wait.
A meatball inside a bagel?
Dude, it's the business. It's the bagel shop. I mean, it's just a sandwich shop, but for bread, they do bagels. So,
sure.
So they do all the shit in there.
And so, okay, I need to understand this. Is the meatball cooked into the bagel, or is it like they just put it in between the bagel once they cut it open?
I have a feeling after anybody down there hears this, they're going to realize the error in their way and that they could be baking the meatball into it.
That seems like...
But no, they just make a meatball sandwich by cutting a bagel in
half.
Okay,
all right. That does sound pretty great.
It really
so some
does.
Mozzarella cheese. What do you got in that bad boy or something? Yeah, right? Is it? What's it?
That's going to be juicy.
And that's going to be good. Next time I'm down in Moscow. I don't find myself down there often, but when I go, I will have to go check that out. So 12 years of music and music full time for a couple years you've found now.
Yeah.
What, and it just takes a little bit of effort, right? Like just getting, just playing and actually, because listen, it's funny, I talk to a lot of musicians and I feel like music has a lot of parallels with comedy.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like people get into comedy or music because they don't want to have to get up at 8 a.m. They want to go
for
to
real.
Work at 9 p.m., you know? They want to be able to smoke a joint during the day, maybe get a little day drunk on, catch a nap,
yeah.
and then go to work.
And then, like, there's such an irony in that because, like, that was definitely the vibe that I was on.
Yeah.
But as you put that much pressure on it of like, we're going to pay rent on this. Like I set my alarm for 8:30 this morning.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Because like, yeah, dude, I hate waking up before noon. I am not about it, but like there is so much shit that goes into this.
Yeah.
That, like, I mean, I'm super grateful for it and it's way better than 9 to 5-ing, but it takes so much work and it's because it's not just playing music. It's booking the things. It's putting the band together.
Right.
It's booking, getting the promotion together, making sure people turn out, being an active member of the community and supporting other people.
Yeah.
Because like there's a lot of gigs happening in Spokane. It's great, but there's not that much to go around. So like making it work, it's not just the one thing. It's a really interesting mix of functions.
So are you that, so everyone, there's kind of that guy and I guess the band or scene, you know, for comedy it's more of a total scene of like, you know, it's kind of, comedy's like one big band locally.
Word.
You know, there's some guys are Lennon, some guys are Pete Best. they were kind in the band, but never really, and they're around still. But nobody regards them as much. So, like, are you the guy who is moving and shaking in your band and making those things happen, or is there other people who are helping?
I don't know, man. Like, it goes back and forth. Some days I feel like I'm just Captain Kazoo, and I just so happen to stand at the front of the stage.
Okay.
But, like, and it changes from band to band. Like, I've got the Jason Perry Trio, and I named it after myself, so I better be doing most of the work. But then I play in, like, a 10-piece African funk band.
Okay.
And, like, I just show up and help everybody else sound good. And, you know.
I want to ask a question about that. The African funk band, especially in Spokane, Washington. How did that happen?
Because there are some really cool dudes that play this music.
Yeah.
So there's this whole genre called Afrobeat.
Sure, and, yeah, yeah.
And it's what happened when James Brown's music landed over in Africa in about 1970. Mm-hmm. This dude, Fela Kuti, put some African rhythms to James Brown and they lined up really cool.
Yeah.
So it's this whole genre, and to bring it all the way back of how I ended up in it, about 8 years ago when I was living down in Moscow going to school, there was this band called Groove Patrol that came down and they played at the local Hemp Fest. I was stoned and like I spent all like hour and a half of these guys' set just knocked out and just tranced in their music. And just like, I'd never heard of Afrobeat music, but it just fucked me all the way up. Like
yeah.
It had the sophistication of jazz, but then it had like just the balls of rock and roll. And I just danced for an hour and a half. And then they played at the
That's
club
great.
That night,
yeah.
Got their album and like wore that record out listening to it. And then 6 years later I got, this was about a year and a half ago. I got a call to come hang out and jam with some dudes, and it was the guys from that band.
Oh, wow.
And that first day, we played one of their tunes called Public Option, and it just knocked me out. I was like, they were like, you know, we're going to do this tune from our old group, Groove Patrol. You know this? And I was like, fuck yeah, I do. I've been listening to this for 6 years.
Yeah, this is my jam.
Yeah, and it's just crazy how life comes together like that.
So were you in this band, do you play electric guitar then?
Yeah.
Okay. Like a lead or like a rhythm? I don't even, I guess, what would you consider? If there's 10 people in the band, you have a lot of...
Yeah, it's all super fluid. Like there's four horns, two guitars, three percussionists, bass, and drum kit. So like I take solos and I'll play lead guitar, but that maybe makes up like 5% of a gig.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rest of the time I'm just supporting the groove, and it's really beautiful because the tunes are 8, 12 minutes long, and it just gets this really trance vibe going where, like, it's repetitive, but there's the little inflections so it stays unique. And yeah, it's monstrous.
That's great, man. So I used to play at like, what is it called? Swacked with New Jack City and whatnot, didn't you?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was a good teeth cutting experience. I hooked up with that band for about 18 months, and like when I got into that group, I still wasn't playing good. Like, my guitar playing was pretty sad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was great. We had at least a couple of gigs a week, and they were all three-hour gigs. And, like, it was just a great experience to get hip to, like, soul, Motown, and, like, pop, and just get to play that music and
sure.
play it a lot.
Is it, what's the, now, what, are you writing your own music, too, then? Is that a lot of writing your own music and songs? Because you,
yeah.
we're going to, I think we're going to listen to something in a little bit here, and that's all original music you're doing.
That's right, yeah, yeah, this group with the Jason Perry Trio is just a lot of funk rock, like, steeped in New Orleans funk, but then, you know, bringing that Red Hot Chili Peppers rock to it.
Okay. So take me through the process of writing. The idea of writing music always sounded like it's like if it's like telling a caveman to build a spaceship or like electrical engineering. Like I wouldn't even know where to start.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a terrible process. Don't ever do it, man. It sucks. I mean, I love it, and it comes out really great, but it's so hard because, like,
sure.
you could just start out with, like, a little kernel of an idea. Sometimes it's, like, 8 words that are really dope or a guitar line that's really rad, and you're like, okay, like, that needs a song around it.
Sure.
So then you have to fill out the rest of it. So, like, there's always a kernel, and at its best, like, the process is really just surrendering. Like, you just start playing it. And everything just falls out, and the ideas aren't logical or conscious. There, you just get into the flow state. So, like, a few of the tunes popped out that way in a half hour, and those are gems. But some of the tunes I'm most proud of on the album, like, came out over months.
Sure, it takes time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine, again, you know, the parallels with comedy. It's like, God, I've written jokes where I had a joke that I worked at literally for years. I wanted this by this premise, and I would keep returning to it and keep trying to find a way to make it work and like say it on stage just to kind of get it out there again, see if anything comes to mind. It took me almost 4 years to write this joke, and it's like a 2-minute joke. It's like, and I'm like, you know, is it worth it in the end? I don't even fucking know. But like that, it was just one of those things. I'm like, God, I know something is there. The weird thing to me about writing music would be I would always think this is like, do you ever worry that you're like, when you write a song, do you ever have to worry that not lyrically necessarily, but the actual music of it, and think, is this a song already? Like, is this something that's out there? Or is this something that like sounds like something I've heard? Or is it like, is this a wholly original concept? Cause you know, you can, sometimes they call it what, cryptonesia, where you hear something
yeah.
and then you like, don't remember hearing it, then you produce it, and you're like, this is an original idea. And then you're like, definitely not an original idea, you know?
So me and my hippie friends call that the subconscious steals.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Same thing, but, like, it's a weird thing with music where, like, you have a lot more liberty. Like, you, like, I, one of the tunes on the album, I wrote based on an Otis Redding tune.
Okay,
like,
sure.
I snagged the chords from it. And I was like, cool, that's a perfect structure. Like, the tempo and the chord changes were exactly what I needed for the tune. Now, the way I play those chords sounds wildly different.
Sure.
And the melody that I got to fit on it is wildly different. So I would be surprised if anybody listening to it ever goes like, oh, yeah, that's that Otis Redding tune. Because it's just not in there. There's so many different layers with music. You could almost take the same song and throw a drastically different drum beat and bass line on it, and it's a different
song
now.
Changes it up so much with the
yeah.
tempo and everything. Yeah, it just seems like, you know, if you're just, I would imagine just strumming at a guitar, and you're like, you pick something out, and you're like, oh, that's kind of nice. And then, I mean, there's no way to like throw a guitar tune into Google and you know, there's like no guitar search Google where you like it comes back and be like, this happened here.
No, definitely
I mean,
not
yet. It probably will be at some point. It's just some lawyer's office just waiting to sue someone over patent rights on a song or something. Go ahead.
Yeah, and, Ray Manzarek from The Doors once said that amateurs imitate professional steel. So like the line for Break On Through to the Other Side.
Yeah.
They lifted that line straight from James Brown. Like, I don't know what tune it is, but it comes straight out of a James Brown. And like, that's the hook of the tune.
Yeah.
But then they framed it in such a dramatically different way. There's no copyright infringement on that because it's not the same thing.
Right. There's no, it's just a piece of something that like has so many other parts built around it. It's become a whole different thing.
Yeah. And like at some point there's only 12 notes. Yeah. So no matter how you arrange them, somebody will have arranged them in that way before. But at the same time, it's like using speech, man. Like, how many people have used the word "the"? Like, we're not plagiarizing that.
At least 30-40%, I think. You know, I don't know statistics exactly. We'd have to take a Gallup poll, but somewhere in that range, I bet. Maybe, you know, 40 in America, 50 worldwide.
That's a lot to ask.
So with music, when you started, because how old are you now, if I can ask?
28.
So you started when you were
16.
16. Okay. What were some of your musical influence? Like, what were you listening to at 16 that molded little Jason's musical mind?
Jesus. When I was like 16, I was really into the Woodstock documentary.
Okay.
Like, and obviously all the music that went around it. So Jefferson Airplane, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, The Doors, even though they weren't there.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, when I found that and weed when I was 16, like,
it opens up a whole another, it's, yeah, Alice down the fucking, you know, rabbit hole there.
For real, man. And like the Cheshire Cat and the Smoking Caterpillar had like the entirety of a life philosophy put together for me. Like when Jefferson Airplane set up against the wall, motherfucker, I was like, okay, yeah, cool, I'm in. Let's break on through.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting over the course of 12 years and getting somewhat into adulthood, like separating the wheat from the chaff on that. Obviously, there was a lot of indulgence and hedonism of that era that necessarily productive. But those, like, Hendrix could wail, and that's timeless.
Sure. Yeah, I feel like, you know, the hedonism, as you say, and things like that, not necessarily productive to the individual, but I think their efforts were needed and productive as a society and musically.
For sure. And like, I think in the 50s, like, sensory pleasure and joy were probably underrated societally. So like that pendulum needed to swing all the way.
Well, they were taboo. They were stigmatized very much still in the 50s, where, in the, you know, that was very much still, you know, the carnal pleasures. And, you know, Ricky and Lucy slept in separate beds on, you know, I Love Lucy. You watch those old reruns of I Love Lucy, and, you know, they have seen of the bedroom, and they're both sleeping in separate beds. Like, they wouldn't even let them show couples sleeping in the same bed.
Jesus.
On TV. Like, that was how intense it was back then.
Yeah, man. Like, those cats were so misguided that, like, they'd call dating going steady.
Yeah.
I've been dating for a long time, and nothing about that is steady.
Yeah, I just call it anal. That's yeah, my grandma wishes I'd stop saying that.
What are you doing to your grandma?
Listen, man, we're close. The
sounds real tight.
Yeah, it's, well, not after a lot of, not after enough anal. She had 14 kids too, so it's a fucking wreck down there. It is a fucking train wreck down there. No, I'm just kidding, my grandma's dead.
Rip.
Yeah, that's because of the anal. Okay.
So that's a really sweet Salvador Dali you got in here, man.
They're both Salvador Dalis.
Word.
Yeah, I have two Salvador Dali paintings in here. Can you see, not that this is terrible pod, but can you see what the one on the left, do you see what it is?
Dude, I mean, I can see an ass in there.
There's an ass in there, but the
and Abe Lincoln?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people don't see the Abe Lincoln in that.
Yeah, I've been reading about the Founding Fathers a lot lately.
Oh, how's Jesus Christ? That's got to be a nightmare, right?
No, dude, so inspiring. They were the baddest motherfuckers ever. When Jefferson was writing the Declaration of Independence, his wife had a child like 200 miles away.
Yeah.
And she wasn't recovering, and he's getting all this correspondence via mail. So after 2 weeks of like sweating it out every night, while he's writing the fucking Declaration of Independence, he's like, all right, this really isn't going well. So he takes off on horseback. It takes him 3 fucking weeks to get back home because it's January.
Jesus
and it's
Christ.
Virginia.
Yeah.
And so there's some snow on the ground. And now they just gloss over this in the biography. Like, that's just two sentences of like, it took him 3 weeks to get home. But like, what the fuck does that mean to be riding a horse for 3 weeks through the snow? Like, what's he sleeping like? And then he gets back there and she dies when he's like 20 something.
Yeah.
And she's like, never take another lover. So he didn't. And then he went on to like become the president.
Jesus Christ.
Like the depth of conviction that these dudes had is a staggering.
Well, that is, they definitely, were committed to things. Not all their ideas were great, but there were
definitely some flaws. Like, I'm not saying all were solid.
They definitely had gumption and stick-to-itiveness. That's what I would applaud them for that.
And given the cultural context of like the 1600s and monarchies that they were coming from, like, they were very progressive and forward-thinking. Like, it really changed my ideas of patriotism.
Sure.
Like, I'm a pretty anti-status quo, anti-authoritarian guy.
Yeah.
So, like, the word patriotism, like, never really resonated with me. And so, like, I'd read Jack Kerouac and Hunter S. Thompson, and they'd be talking about finding, like, the great freedom of America out on the road. And like, they were still using patriotic language to describe their conquest for internal freedom.
Sure.
And it never really lined up to me until I read about the Founding Fathers, because that was ultimately the trip that they were aspiring to, was personal liberation and manifesting one's truest self in their surroundings.
Well, it's a really interesting point, because I think that a lot of, you know, that's, I think being an artist yourself, it's staggering as you go out and realize how stagnant and kind of sedentary people are.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm from LA originally. I've lived all over and I've lived here for about 10 years. But it's one of the things I've found about people in Spokane, especially, I mean, a lot of areas I've lived, actually. I say Spokane, but you know what? People I knew in LA, people I knew in Montana, other areas I've lived, same way. They kind of get comfortable and no one ever wants to really like go find themselves. I think like people, especially people who don't want to like be alone with themselves, that really weirds me out, man. Like, that is a weird thing that people, like, I have to be around people. I don't want to, like, I'm like, dude, I'm like, go spend 2 weeks on the road by yourself and see what the fuck happens, man. You're going to figure some shit out. Believe me, you're going to figure some shit out about yourself.
For real. But like, there's a reasonable fear though, that like when, or if you do find yourself, then you have to be respectful of that, authentic to it, and responsible for it.
Sure.
And project that out into a society that is often comfortable and dysfunctional. It's a terrifying prospect to actually know oneself enough and then embody it.
Right. I think but I think when you get good enough at it, it's so freeing.
Absolutely. And like, the alternative is to not be oneself. And so I don't know what else you would do in life in the place of that.
Of being yourself?
Yeah. Like, what's the alternative?
Well, I think it's just being disingenuous and living a lie. And I think that is a proponent of a lot of depression and anxiety issues in America these days, is people forced to, or willingly, or I guess willful ignorance to just kind of disregard the things they want or their true self to fit into social norms, or being scared of, you know, any type of actual life and just fitting into those comfort zones. And I think that really, really plays into depression. Because I think I always say it like this. Like, we need pressure and we need friction and we need gravity and something pressing on us. Because, like, if you take astronauts and put them in space, there's zero gravity and there's no pressure. There's no actual gravitational pressure. Their muscles actually begin to atrophy.
Yeah.
So, they, like, that is such a good analogy for what happens when we live in this perfect world of just, like, I just go through and I have enough money to get here and I don't, like, and nothing great happens, but nothing bad. It's just kind of flat line.
Yeah, I think culturally we live in like a real inflection point, because 100 years ago even, there was so much friction to just survive.
Yeah,
That just to be at a point where you could have a roof over your head and provide for your family, like that was an excellent manifestation of your personhood.
Sure.
But now we have so much material comfort that it's kind of changed the paradigm of what it means to be successful, and it's introduced self-actualization into the equation. I'm a huge fan of evolutionary psychology, and I mean, you hit the nail on the head there. Like, humans are built to struggle.
Yeah.
Anytime we attain a level of comfort, our psychology resets, and we don't value that new thing that's comfortable or wonderful.
Right.
We're in a constant state of becoming and striving.
We actually excel in adversity. That's where we are at our best. And it's a weird thing. Because, I mean, I even think about, I mean, I'm 37 years old. When I was a kid, and I grew up pretty desperate. I grew up in, you know, east side of Long Beach in the 80s, gang and it was bad. But, like, when I was a kid, poor was like, your family didn't have a car. Your family might not have had a fridge. You know, your family definitely didn't have a TV. Like, I mean, shit like that. Like, it was poor, you know, and like now you can be poor, but you still have a big screen TV. You still have a cell phone. You still have a car. And like that's so you can have the things that kind of not equal, but almost put you on like it's kind of the same comforts or like amenities that almost anyone else has all the way up. And now they have a better version of it, maybe, or more of them. But you know, you can get a cell phone for there's more power, there's more computing power in the cell phone than the spaceship shuttle Atlantis,
for real.
And you can be. You can make $1,200 a month and probably have one of these cell phones.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, so there you go. Case in point. So exactly. So you, and it's such a so it's such and, an interest. So we all just have the comforts. Everything's, you know, climate controlled and air conditioned and et cetera. So.
And so then what does that extra increment of material wealth go to? Like, is it really just ostentatiousness where we're all just signaling our affluence without actually having anything that makes us tangibly happier, wiser, better? Like, comfort isn't an ideal to be strived for.
Yeah, I think comfort is, like they say, what do they say about money? Like, something, anything over like $120,000 made a year all the way up is just like, you're not any happier. Or so it's like $90,000 or something like that.
I've heard 60 to 80,000, yeah. But there's some argument in there.
So we'll say 90. We'll say 90,000 is like, and anything over that is really indifferent. It doesn't matter. You're at kind of at your maximum happiness. And really all I think money does, it doesn't buy you happiness. It does buy you some freedom to do the things you enjoy a little bit.
It can. But the things you do to get that money often sacrifice the self that would enjoy it. And then once you have a level, there's this implicit attachment to maintaining it. And often that robs oneself of the freedom to enjoy it.
Sure, the constant struggle of making sure that paycheck keeps coming. You never get to actually enjoy that paycheck.
And you're perpetually dangling carrot. Right.
It is an odd. And you know, the more I think about it, the more I think that's very, very accurate. I mean, my biggest thing is I do get it. I would love some some time, you know, some free time, free up some time to do the things I really enjoy in life. But also, you know, I do comedy. I really enjoy comedy. And there's, you know, that's a freeing time for me. I'm sure music's the same way.
And it's meaningful.
Yeah.
Like we had a gig about a month ago where me and my buddy were going through some pretty emotionally fraught times. So for an hour before our gig, it was a very packed gig at the Lucky You, like big energy. Mm-hmm. And we played for 4 hours.
Oh, damn.
And we spent an hour before we went on stage that night just swimming in the depths, like just a real brother of mine, just talking about the hardships and in a way that wasn't lamenting, but we were trying to like dive down to a kernel about like what was the meaning of this and how can we derive meaning from it and snag a lesson from it.
Yeah.
And then we got to play instrumental music for 4 hours and just swim in whatever that is. I almost cried after I played a guitar solo because we were just in it.
And
making music isn't oftentimes joyful. I mean, there's definitely some fun times that go along with it. There's a great deal of sacrifice. But for me, what it comes down to is those moments where whether it meant as much to me, to anybody else in the room. I mean, I know there were some people that dug it, but just being able to get to participate in the search for meaning professionally really steels me against the struggles and hardships of it.
Sure, it makes it worth it, that time.
Yeah.
It definitely offsets that. And it's a weird thing, too, because creating, again, is something that humans... is a necessity for humans, and creating art and creating something that expresses themselves. And it's a weird thing. Like, I feel like I actually get kind of bummed out for, and this is the people that, again, don't want to know themselves and kind of like just be alone and kind of experience life a little bit. Like they don't have like a legacy they're going to leave behind. Like when you die, you're going to have a catalog of music you've left behind, right? You know what I'm saying?
No.
You're going to have music.
Dude, I've never gotten in touch with the idea of leaving behind
a legacy.
No,
it's not a legacy, I should say. It's not a legacy. But you're leaving behind a piece of you. You're leaving behind something. You've created something that lives on.
Man, I got no delusions of grandeur, man. 60 years after I'm dead, nobody's going to remember.
But you did something, though. But hell yeah. But you did something. You tried.
And hopefully the people that I know in this world, like, we've touched and we've had an impact on each other.
Yeah.
But, like, man, at some point, it's all so fleeting, and that's just part of the game.
Well, that is true. Yeah. And that's, I mean, the finality of it. It's just kind of all. But I think more and more, it goes that direction because we've passed the point where I think things also can be classic. There's very little where anything can be classic anymore. There's classic movies, there's classic films, there's classic music, but all that stuff was classic to our parents also.
Yeah.
Probably, you know? Whereas now, there's very little that comes out music or movies or any type of art where you're like, oh, this will stand the test of time.
Right? Like, as much as I feel like Doug Stanhope is a classic every time he gets on stage, I don't think he's going to be remembered that way by history.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And actually, you know, he's going to be here in a couple days.
Spokane or Seattle?
Spokane.
What?
Yeah.
Can I get tickets?
It's fucking pretty sold out.
Gross.
Hold on. Let me check.
Come on, Deez.
I know, actually.
Hit me with that back door.
Yeah, that is this, come on, that's baby. This Thursday.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, that's this week.
Yeah, I need that. I didn't know he was coming to town.
Yeah, one night only, Thursday. Jesus. It's 7:30.
Which is a great segue because I'm going to be hosting an open mic every Thursday in March from 7 to 10 at the Hidden Mother Brewery.
Are you going to be there this Thursday?
Yeah.
I was going to say I might be able to sneak in with me. I'm going to be there.
That's delightful.
But fuck, man. Bummer. All right. Yeah. I'll let you know how it is. One night only.
Thanks.
You can't get a fill in? Get someone to fill your mic for you?
Yeah. No.
All right. But yeah, every Thursday, Mother including this Thursday. He's doing the music. So, what do you think? Let me ask you this: what do you think music or like our culture in America is going to be like in, say, 20 years?
Oh, dude, I can't even touch that. Like, I really like listening to Elon Musk and really smart people like Peter Thiel talk about, like, where things are heading. And I think that we're at such a strange place in the parabola of technological progress. I'm not even going to touch speculating on it. Man, if I can acquire health insurance in the next 6 months, it's going to be a roaring success. And that's about as far as my timeline exists. I'm stoked to see what happens in 20 years, but I'm not touching it, man. What do you think's coming?
I think it's, well, if we continue the direction we're going in, which I think it's happening more rapidly, it's like, I think there's going to be a lot more integration with technology, humans and technology. They say they've actually kind of figured out how to basically download consciousness into kind of like a kind of just your fucking on a hard drive, man.
Gross.
And you know, they've got the Neuralink coming where just a little, you know, you're basically internet in your head.
Yeah.
And I think all these things are, it's really weird because you know, when we were younger, that was so futuristic and it was the future and far-fetched and something you'd never even think would actually occur in our lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's happening. And I don't think all progress is good progress.
That's what I was going to say.
You know, our gift through evolution was our minds, but it is also, I think, going to be our downfall.
I feel like society has out-evolved our psychology. Like, Jonathan Haidt makes some very compelling points about the rapid rise in depression and linking that directly to smartphones.
Yeah.
Like, we're not happier.
No, I'm
disinclined to believe that with more technology, that'll be the solution. Maybe we're going to figure it out, but
I don't think there's a way to change our billions of years of evolutionary and instinctual innate nature cannot be overcome in a 100-year span of technology. Deep in us.
Like, we might find the clitoris of our psychology and like really just get some technology for that.
Yeah.
But I think it's a little deeper than that.
No, I think we are meant to, because like there's some, I use this analogy in dating, but I use it also globally in life. I'll say it now. Less, you know, with dating, I say less history, more mystery.
Dig.
Like I don't want to know. I know, but I just want to have mystery, and like there is no mystery in life anymore, especially for kids. Like, there's no, you can talk to someone anywhere in the world. I couldn't even imagine talking to people in like Kazakhstan or something. Fucking when I didn't even know there was a country until, you know, Borat came out, probably.
For real. Like, dude, back when I was 16, me and my best friend used to have so much fun just trying to figure out reality. We would spend an hour debating some minute point about society or physics, and it was the best exercise. We learned something just in the struggle to ascertain knowledge.
Right.
And we could have robbed ourselves of that by just looking it up.
It forces your brain to work, and now we're not forcing our brains to work at all. And actually, it's one of the things I do when if I can't remember something, someone's like, Google it. I'm like, no, I'm going to make myself, I'm going to take like an hour or so, if it takes that long, and try to force myself to remember it. Cause it's just another muscle and it needs to be used. You know, your brain needs to be used. Otherwise it does, you know, it does dull.
Yeah, dude. So it's a muscle. You can atrophy that shit.
Absolutely. And I think technology has been great in so many ways, but having unlimited access to everything, like it's part of the, I like, so it's part of the reason I like stopped. I stopped watching porn a while back.
That's what I was just going to segue to.
I gave it up, dude. I gave it up because I'm like, this is not healthy. And it's making my dating life bad. It's making the way I like look at sex and girls bad. Like it's the whole thing. It's just, it's not good. And you know, like I gave up porn and masturbation. I'm like, and if I go
you
back,
you gave up masturbation
gave it up,
too.
I'm living that Jesus.
Let me
life,
see your
man.
Palms. I don't
Dude,
believe.
I
you.
Am, man. Fuck it. Gave it up. I did. And I said, if I ever go back, I'm only going back and I'm only masturbating to imagination.
That's hip, dude. Because I remember when I used to be able to do that.
Right, yeah.
It was a thing.
Try and do that now. Good luck.
Dude. No, and it's crazy, too. Like, I've just noticed, I mean, maybe I'm just meeting increasingly more interesting people. But over the last 5 years, the sort of things that women that I'm intimate with have requested
it's off the charts, right?
It's increasingly headed further beyond I thought existed.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that is a tie to the things that we expose ourselves to.
I think it is. I made a joke a while back that like when you're a kid.
Can we edit that out? My ex-girlfriend's going to be so mad if that lands on the internet.
You didn't name her. It's okay.
We're trying to be cool, man.
She doesn't know which one. I had a joke a while back about how, like, when we're kids, we thought, you know, we thought we'd grow up and figure things out. Then you grow up and figure out that just all adults are into BDSM and do coke. Like, that's kind of what
I think that's what figuring it out is, man.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, what are you doing tonight?
Yeah, well, like, were our parents like that, though? Or was it just...
I mean, like, my parents or, like, the royal our
the
parents?
The royal our, you know.
I mean, like, it's always interesting when you get to know some people, like, past the surface level, and you're like, yeah. what do you guys really... I think most people are a lot more interesting than they let on.
I think so, too, but I do think, going back to what you said about us being exposed to things...
Yeah, that's a thing,
too. It does normalize it, and not that it shouldn't be... Not that there should be a stick... Not that there's anything wrong with it. I ain't...
All right, Seinfeld.
But, like, I'm a pretty open guy, man. But, like, it's interesting that these things... I think they have accelerated, and it's it's so ubiquitous, and I think that's why you see a lot of people... do a lot of things they probably are fine with, and then they get like they kind of get it's like a werewolf, and then a werewolf coming out down after the full moon, and they hit like 27 and they're pregnant and married, and they're like, I fucking did what? Holy, and it's on the internet. They're like fuck it, you know. I was blowing how many dudes in an Escalade? Like, what the fuck? And I mean, whatever, man, live your life, dude. I've done some weird shit, okay? Like, I can't even begin to talk the life I've lived over these 37 years, but I'm a psychopath, so time.
Amen, brother. Yeah, dude, the depths of the depravity I've embraced sometimes impress me. And, like, I was there, and I'm like, no, dude, we really...
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That, I don't remember that. It didn't happen.
No, it happened.
Yeah, we did that.
My the girl who sits in the chair you're in right now, the Sophie Tomey. She's the news anchor on my show. One of my best friends, another comedian. I probably see her and talk to her more than anyone else in the world. You know, and she knows me very well. And I said something the other night, a couple weeks ago on the show, and I'm like, oh my God. I go, that might be the worst thing I've ever said. And she's like, no. Not a chance. And I'm like, wait, no? She goes, not even top 50. And I'm like, that's not top 50? I'm like, what's the shit I'm saying? She's like, you say some horrible things. And I was like, well, goddamn it.
So like, I've noticed a thing as I've performed more where, like as we were talking about with the brain and it being a muscle, like, if there is a muscle that is an aversion to shame, I have worked that muscle out so much that, like, my barometer for when I should feel shame
is so uncalibrated.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like, have you had the similar experience with that?
Yeah, I don't think I have shame, man. Like, I really, nothing right. makes me feel awkward or weird or shame. Like, I'm very unabashedly who I am. And as I get older, it's even more so. I just am, like, embrace it more, and I'm just like, whatever, man.
Yeah, like, you're shame bondaging your conversations.
Yeah. Never looked at it that way. I should get a safe word.
That's what comedy is, right?
That's true. It's just going out there. Never looked at it that way. Yeah. I have no clue. I don't, because I say and do things that other people like, how, why do you even think that? How does your mind come up with that? I'm like, how does yours not? Like, I don't know. I didn't try to have, this is just the way my mind thinks. These are the things that come out of my mouth. The thoughts I have, like, you force myself to have, it's just how, that's not how thoughts work.
Like, who is the thinker of the thought? I'm just here listening to my mind,
yeah,
man.
I'm just along for this ride too, man.
So I mean, I know I'm the guest here, but I've been going through an interesting experience lately where, like, my career is becoming actualized. Like, for the first year and a half of, like, full-timing music, it was just kind of white-knuckling it, and just, like I never felt like I was there yet.
Yeah.
I was still trying to get some stability and equilibrium. And so in the last 6 months, like, it's largely gotten there. And it's set up this really interesting disparity between my expectation of what it would be like to be a professional musician,
okay,
say 5 years ago when I dedicated myself to this path. And, like, I had all these amorphous ideas about what that life would be and how amazing it would be. And then, like everything else in life, you get there and it's not that. In some ways it's better, and in some ways it's worse.
Sure. Yeah.
And I would love to hear about your experience with that sort of thing. So, like, to put it concretely, like, what are the things that you expected a life in comedy to be that it's not, and vice versa?
God, man, it's so... Well, first of all, like, people are always like, oh, man, you get a lot of girls. I'm like, get a lot of girls? Comedy is not an avalanche of pussy, my friend. Like, listen, first of all, it's usually dudes who want to tell you the most racist jokes you'll ever hear and then invite you to their basement to play fucking Skyrim for the night or something like that. I'm like, I don't want to, like, I don't, what the, like, this is, that's what I'm getting out of this. They're like, do you want to, I've got some coke. You want to do coke? I'm like, can I have mine to take back to my hotel and do it without you? Can I just give me what I would do, and I'll go to my hotel and not have to listen to you be racist all night?
That's the fucked up thing about free coke, man. They don't tell you it's gonna come with 2 hours of bullshit stories that you don't need.
2 hours if you're lucky. Once you start doing the coke, it's like 8 hours.
Time stops when you're high.
Yeah, man. And
So you don't get laid as much. Now, do you not get laid, or do you not get laid as much as you thought? Like, it's not an avalanche, but is it at least a trickle of snowfall pussy?
I guess I don't know if I thought it would be an avalanche of pussy anyway. I guess I didn't. I don't know. I think people think it is.
I thought I would have an avalanche of pussy.
No, it doesn't happen. I can't say I've never. I can't say it's never happened. I've had a couple good, I've had some, you know, but I've had some luck. But I mean, if you average it out after years of doing comedy, it ain't great. The batting average is pretty low.
It's like marginally better than working in an office.
Depends on how often that office, you know, fires and hires a new secretary. Because you can listen, new secretaries are... That's good right there.
I'm surprised you didn't get fired. This was pre-me too.
Yeah. Well, I was, you know, there's consent.
Congrats.
I wasn't raping secretaries. I'm a serial secretary rapist.
Hey, man, it's your story. You tell it how you want.
That's what I told the judge. I'm sticking to it. she was a liar and a whore. It's funny because here's the thing about comedians too. There's you will, I know and am friends with, like personal friends that have phone numbers, hang out with them, they're in town. Fairly large comedians, people you see on Netflix, people who, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's this, you know, so like I have a Rolodex of numbers of very, very large comedians.
Like Ralphie May large? Or like...
Yeah, like that scale, people I could call, people that will respond to my texts and things.
Rad.
This story encapsulates comedy because you can be that, you can know everyone kind of. I always say that every comedian is about two people removed from knowing every other comedian. You at least know someone who knows someone who, but I mean, maybe even one person removed. But yeah. I did a show with a guy a couple years ago, super nice guy. He's been on The Late Show and blah, blah, you know, he's probably not a household name, but nice guy. And then he was coming back through the area. I got on some of the shows I do. And then his friend, a guy who actually is a writer for Jimmy Kimmel, and like comes through and written on the Oscars, and this guy like sends me his resume, and I'm like, this guy, why is this guy texting me, like, who the, you know,
because he needs a gig.
Yeah, because he wants a gig. So, and I'm like, he's gonna be through the air and he wants a gig, you know. Basically, he's going to Montana to vacation with his wife on the suite at these like nice hot springs. He's like, oh, if I pick up a gig, I can probably foot the bill for this whole thing. And I'm like, yeah, sure, makes sense. So I'm in Bozeman, Montana, in the middle, like, so, okay, so it's the middle of winter last year. I'm in Bozeman, Montana doing a show, and he calls me on the phone. He's like, hey, Deese, you know, it's Jesse. He's like, hey, if I, you know, we want to talk about those shows coming up. He goes, hey, sorry if I lose you. I'm on an elevator right now in New York. We're doing the Jimmy Kimmel show in New York this week, so we're on the road, you know, a little tired, anywhere in an elevator, I might lose you, you know, we're in the fucking whatever, M Billy, New York. And he's like, you know how it is. And I'm like, and I go, yeah, Jesse, I'm in a Motel 6 in the middle of winter in Bozeman, Montana right now, about to do a show at a brewery tonight. I totally get it. Same thing. And like, you know, we're friends. But we are not the same, you know.
And it's fascinating to me, like, that quantum reality that exists. Like I've been getting out of town a bit lately and, like, taking my trio out on the road to, like, make pitiful gas money. And, like, you drive 12 hours. And sometimes it's really awesome and there's a great crowd. Yeah, and sometimes there's six people that are just eating food.
Yeah.
And so – but the thing that surprises me is that, like, given – what could be objectively disappointing circumstances, that is just so outweighed by, like, the fact that, like, me and my brothers, like, communed that night. And, like, we did a thing that, in my view, approaches being sacred. And, like, the thing that we did that night mattered. And the band that we played with that night did something that mattered.
Yeah.
And, like, that really just dwarfs being in a snowstorm in a Motel 6. I mean, like, that is the reality, but it's also not at all because it's only the external reality.
Sure.
And, like, that's the thing that's blown me away the most about doing this is, like, a lot of the extrinsic satisfaction that I thought I'd get hasn't been there. But that whole internal reality has just been so delightful.
Well, it is, you know, when at the end of the day, despite, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, when I'm on the road for weeks at a time, it's like you drive 5 to 8 hours a day, you load in the show, you do the show, you sleep in a shitty Motel 6, yeah, the next day you do it again and do it for a couple weeks in a row. It'll wear you out. But at the end of the time, I always try and be grateful. I'm like, I'm getting paid to do what I love doing. And, you know, at the end of I'm doing pretty well at it. I'm making a living. It's good. It's like I can't, this is way better than things I've done in the past. Like, I can't. So I try to have that perspective every time I think about how something is shitty about what I'm doing. I'm like, you know, dude, there's guys who are literally like cleaning out porta potties right now for minimum wage.
Yeah.
So you probably should be happy that you work a couple hours a night doing, although really I work all day doing
all
shit. You know, I'm just not on stage, a million other things.
That's just a part of the iceberg that's above water.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the part where I actually get to enjoy myself a little more.
Yeah.
But it pays off. Yeah, when people are like, oh, you just, what, you worked 30 minutes tonight? I'm like, fuck, no. Like, I was like, I've been working all day.
Do you engage with people when they say that kind of shit? Or do you just, like, just kind of just go, yeah, man, it's pretty great?
Yeah.
Or do you like, set a motherfucker straight? Like, do you want to see my calendar?
Right,
like,
yeah.
Do you want to see what I did today?
Yeah, I've been up since 7 o'clock, and I went to bed at 5 a.m. last night. So it's like, this is, you know... yeah, so it depends on my mood or who the person. You know, some people want to hear that, like, you're a rock star. Like, yeah, it's a lifestyle, man. This is what I do. Cool. And other people want to, like, are interested that, no, I mean, this is a lot. Like, I had to, like, getting this venue set up to do this took hours. And not only hours, but, like, hours of getting on the venue and meeting with them and setting it up and the promotional stuff and the event pages and blah, blah, blah.
Gambling on it.
Yeah.
May or may not work out.
Yeah.
It's crazy, too. Like, I do the same where, like, you know, there's different layers of authenticity. But the thing that's weird to me is, like, regardless of which way I go with that, whether it's, like, just awesome or, like, there's – both things are true.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating.
It's an odd thing. I think people don't – I mean, like, with – it goes back to people not kind of living any sort of dream. But I think people can't wrap their heads around – how it works. Like, I still have people who have known me my entire life and, like, so what are you up to these days? Like, you know, still doing any comedy? I'm like, yeah, that's what I do, man. Like, that working out, or are you making any money? I'm like, I'm not destitute. Like, I have a house and a car. I'm paying my bills. Like, I don't know what you think my life is. Like, am I homeless? I mean, I'm doing okay. And they just like, oh, well, you know, something will come up.
Hey, good for you. They pat you on the head. Hey, just remember, you know, it's okay if you have to go back to the real world.
Right. Yeah, and I'm like, they just don't, they can't comprehend it.
And before I did it, I couldn't either. Like, I remember talking to, like, musicians that were doing it. And, like, I just had no frame of reference for getting it.
It is a difficult thing to comprehend. I guess I had some benefit because I came from a background of sales and marketing. I had my own business doing consulting and business development, marketing and stuff. So, like, the business side of it was really easy for me. And I think that's the thing a lot of artists struggle with.
Yeah.
So I try and teach a lot of young comics and actually comics who are... When I see a young comic who I think is going to be good if they pursue it, I encourage them. And if they're actually working, I always tell them, like, listen, man, the more you treat it like a business, the more it'll treat you like a business. Like, I know you want to be like your fun, super cool art, but if this is what you want to do for a living, you kind of have to you got to do some business sometimes. And if you can balance that business with the fun and put the work in, like, you're going to be, that the little bit of hustle is almost going to make you more successful than being a really good at your art, you know?
Yeah, like being really good at your art is the buy-in to the game.
Yeah.
But it's always so surprising to me when I dropped out one class short of getting a degree in marketing.
Okay.
And did sales for years. And it always just kind of saddens me when I talk to other artists and they view the hustle and, like, the sales and the business side of it, like, it's going to...
Like,
it's
selling out, almost?
Yeah, like, it's going to soil their artistry.
Yeah.
And, it's no different. It's just not true. Like, it's so real to just go have conversations with people and put things together, and then I go home to my basement and I write songs that are whatever they need to be.
Yeah.
Like, they're not mutually exclusive.
No, there is a balance, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, you don't. And again, not all money's green. You don't have to take every offer either. But do what you know. Find, you know, if it's what you want to do, you're probably gonna have to maybe sacrifice a little, or maybe compromise a little at times. That's just kind of the way it goes.
My name is Jason Perry, and I've played Wagon Wheel.
Yeah, man. You just what you do. It's just what you do. It's all to further careers and do things. And if you really want to make it a career, man, it's fucking, you gotta fucking hustle. And that's the tough part, I think. So
dig.
Let's see. Well, while we're talking about playing the wagon wheel and some music, we've got a song of yours here that I think we want to play. Tell us about this song, because it's coming off a new album. So tell us a little about this.
Yeah, so this tune's called Temperature Rising, and it's about like when you get close to that special lady, or maybe that special man, or maybe that special person that is non-binary. Like, I'm not trying to tell you what to be into. I'm just trying to help you get into it. Because, like, when you get close to that person, you know, your cheeks flush a little bit, and, you know, you start getting really excited. And this tune not only lyrically embodies that, but instrumentally, it's just a fucking party, man.
All right. Well, let's take a listen. This is Temperature Rising. Is that you? Nice.
The rest
rest that play in the background when we talked about. So this is off the upcoming album you got, right?
Yeah, Midnight Shenanigans dropping March 21st.
March 21st. This is the Jason Perry Trio?
That's right.
March 21st. Now, where can people find this?
So it's going to be available in only two places. It's going to be on Bandcamp, and it's going to be available in person. Because if I put it on Apple Music, they're going to set the price at 99 cents a tune, and they're going to take 30 points. I don't live with those kind of margins. If I put it on Spotify, they will give me 4/10 of a penny every time somebody listens
to
it.
Damn.
My landlord does not accept tenths of pennies.
So how many times would someone even have to listen to it to make... It's 4/10 of a penny. So if they listen three times, you get a penny. A little over a penny.
Yeah, let's say twice is a penny. So then 20 times is 10 cents. 200 times is a dollar. 2,000 streams is $10.
For one song or one album?
Per song.
Per song, okay.
And 2,000 streams for a Spokane band is...
That's pretty good. I feel like that would be substantial.
It is. The people that have done that are substantial.
And they split $10 between the band.
Yep.
After taxes.
For an album that normally costs $1,000 to $4,000 to produce.
Yeah. So it's the Jason Perry Trio? There's actually three of you?
There is, man, and I'm so grateful to the dudes on this. I've been in bands for 10 years, and this has just been such an incredible working experience with Chase Howard on drums. He's played with Vanna O, the Ragtag Romantics, and Eddie Pace on the bass. From Evergreen Afro Dub Orchestra, Just Right, River City Roots.
Okay.
And they're both just excellent humans and excellent musicians. It's made my life so easy.
That's awesome. So March 21st at the Red Room, downtown Spokane. You're going to be releasing the album by the Jason Perry Trio. And what's the name of the album again?
Midnight Shenanigans.
Midnight Shenanigans. I like it. What time's the show?
It's going to start at 9 p.m. We got our dudes, Fat Lady, opening up for us. And, yeah, it's going to be a hang and a half.
Man, I got two shows at the Comedy Club that night. I was wondering if I could make it sneak over in between for a little while and check it out. All right, so this is this first album you've ever released?
Yeah, I've been in the studio on other people's records. But, yeah, this has been my first one, like, being the dude.
What's the experience been like with that?
Oh, dude, it's been traumatic.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, just having to be critical of everything and making sure that everything's excellent. And I didn't do a good job of reaching out to my network as I was going through the first parts of the process. Mm-hmm. So I was reinventing the wheel in some places. And because of all of that blind naivete, it actually came together really easily. we managed to record the thing in 2 days. We tracked five songs in about 7 hours in the studio. I came back and we did the vocals. I sent it off to a buddy and he mixed and mastered it. It's been a remarkably efficient process.
Sure.
But in shouldering a disproportionate amount of that burden, it hasn't always been the most enjoyable process. But... It's just incredible listening back to that tune right now. Like, I'm just so pleased with the way everything turned out.
That's great.
And just so excited to get it out there and get it in people's ears.
I'd imagine. No, so with you, there's five tracks on the album.
Yeah.
So due to length of the song, because that one was like a 7-minute song, is that kind of why they trimmed down to about five, you know, all tracks at about, or instead of, you know, 10 to 12, or is it just kind of an EP or...
So there's a few things that go into that. Most of them are economic considerations. Putting together a 10-track album or like even 10 or 15 years ago, a light album would have been 10 tracks. A lot of them were 18. But no matter how much content is on your CD, iTunes is going to put it at $9.99. Mm.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And those last, like, songs 11 through 18 cost just as much studio time and mix and mastering time as the first 10 did.
Sure.
And consumer habits have changed so much. The value of the album is less than it used to be.
Oh, way less. Yeah. There's, I mean, they may buy an album, but you're not buying an album like you used to. You know, you're just downloading things, and it's like there's almost no value to it, essentially, at that point.
It's a very diminishing value with every additional track. So an EP is a pretty consumable size of material.
Sure.
Like, I'm pretty pleased with the 5 tunes because we were able to show off a lot of the different things that we do. Like, that tune's to me, it just embodies, like, just a really raucous party.
Yeah.
But then we've got, you know, a very introspective tune in there, and we get to show the breadth of ourselves in 5 tunes. But we were able to knock it out in 2 days.
There you go. Are you doing physical copies? Or
yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, we're doing physical copies hard.
All right, right on. All right, well, guys, Red Room, March 21st. Check out the Jason Perry Trio and their release date of Midnight Shenanigans. Also every Thursday at the Hidden Mother. And also, let's see. Well, that already happened when this came out. before we're going to get out of here in just a second, Jason. Before we go, I do something with new guests every time. A little thing we call the rundown. This is just a series of questions that we have compiled over the years. Individually, these questions say very little, but put them together and starts to paint a tapestry, a rich tapestry of who this individual is. So I'm going to ask you some questions, and we just appreciate you answer them honestly. You can lie. We won't fact check, though. It's the first question starts hard. If you could travel anywhere in the world, you wanted to, all expenses paid, you had nothing to worry about, money wasn't an issue, but you had to travel the whole time, your travel partner was the person you hate the most in life, where would you go and who would that person be?
Oh, shit. Well, no matter what, I'm going to New Orleans.
Okay. Because
I don't care who I'm with. I am not going to have a bad time in New Orleans,
have
man.
Have you been before?
Yeah. Okay, okay. Give me some gumbo and some funk, and I'm going to be all right.
All right.
And, man, as far as who it would be, man, I don't really carry hatred in my heart. Like, I do a pretty good job of letting that shit go, but there are a few girls out there that definitely hate me. So take your pick, man.
All right, good enough. Good. Some ex and in New Orleans. Okay. What is, if you could only have one pizza for the rest of your life, you can have any toppings on the pizza, any toppings you want. Not a brand. Not from. And that is all for the interview with Jason Perry. Unfortunately, guys, we had a little bit of a technical snafu. Had to do some technical, wonderful magic on the back end to save the audio. We did save. I had to cut it a little short. I guess not short. We were trucking along there, man. We were at a fucking hour and a half almost. A little over an hour in on that dialogue. That was a lot of fun, though. We're definitely going to get Jason back on soon, guys. So keep an eye out for him. Go see him live, the Jason Perry Trio, as well as all his other projects. You'll see links to the episode or to his music in the comments section and on the website. But that's it, guys. Thanks again to Jason Perry for coming out. We'll have him back to talk more. And as for me, guys, you can find me this tomorrow night if you're listening to this within the earshot of where this is recorded in Spokane, Washington. I'll be at the Viking hosting comedy bingo. That's a fun thing, new thing I'm doing. It's a down economy, man. Gotta get a gig. No, it's a fun thing, man. I get to it's basically like a riffing open mic while I do bingo. It's such a weird thing. Life's weird, but it's fun. Come check it out. Sophie, not on the show tonight, but you can find her at the Spokane Comedy Club this Sunday, hosting for Todd Barry. It's going to be a great weekend. Todd Barry's amazing. I can't wait to see him. And that's it, guys. Go to Dee's Comedy/calendar. Check out all the dates. I've got a weekend coming up at the Comedy Club, all sorts of stuff. But for the Social Hour, I am Dee's. And for Jason, thanks very much, guys. And now for my weekly apologies. I would like to apologize to my grandmother, the founding fathers, Jimi Hendrix, Kazakhstan, Motel 6, people from Spokane, my legacy, and everyone who's had sex on the internet. Thanks for listening, guys, and we will see you next week. I was blowing how many dudes in an Escalade?
This podcast is a Pants Pending Studios production.
And part of the Pants Pending Studios podcast network.
Find more of our great shows just by searching Pants Pending in your podcatcher.
For more information or to contact us directly, visit us at pantspending.com.
Please subscribe to this show, share it with your friends, like it on Facebook, and rate it on iTunes.
And we thank you for making us a part of your listening day.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending. Studios!